And welcome back to the Featured Photographer of the Month. With me today is Ashley Hunsberger, our editor. So what's new down in the sunny south, Ashley?
Not too much. It's the rainy south right now, but that's okay. Take a break from the heat. Excited to be here. Excited to talk to our guest today.
Yeah, me too. We've been waiting to talk to him for well over 6 months. And our guest is Frank Velasquez. He is from Albuquerque, New Mexico, a recent graduate of the University of New Mexico, and he's going to fill us in on what else he's up to after he's out of school and going to join the working world.
Right.
Yeah, too bad the fun's over. So, yeah, welcome, Frank.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, Bob. Thanks, Ashley.
Yeah, glad to have you. Yeah, Frank had submitted some of his photos. We'll get into the details of them when we get into the conversation, but he has some really compelling work that I think you're really going to like, and you may not want to do what he's done.
Right.
Depends how brave you are.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Frank, why don't you give us a little bit of your background? Tell us how you got into photography, street photography, documentary photography.
Right. Actually, it's a funny story how I kind of moved into it. I actually used to be an optician, so I used to make eyeglasses and fit prescriptions. I did that for about 10 years, and I've always been into film as well, and I've kind of always been interested in photography. And then one day, my friend, he actually persuaded me to get a camera and to mess around with it. And being a former optician, trying to get the concepts of like shutter speed, ISO, aperture, all that stuff came easy to me because that's what I've been doing for the past 10 years, like with patients and everything. Learning about index of refraction, focal length and all that was just easy. And I was just like, wow, how did I not get into photography sooner? So it kind of came from that, basically, from that background in the medical field. Also, I have a really deep passion for film, for the movement image. So I think just those things put together is basically how I got into photography. So
that's a really logical jump, but it's not one we hear very often.
Right.
I almost took one of my cameras into the optician. I had used to have a Fuji X Pro 1. You had to get a separate diopter for it, and I can never figure out which one to get based on my glasses. And any one I bought would never work.
Right.
And you know, I reached out online, and someone said, "Just go to the optician, and they'll help you work it out."
Right. Exactly.
Plus three, minus four, whatever.
Right.
It drove me nuts.
Yeah, that was my life for a long time, is just working like with prisms and like dioptric power and everything, and lenses. So I don't know. Lenses have always been a part of my life. So yeah,
but it sounds like maybe you had an unfulfilled creative side though in that profession.
Exactly. While I was an optician, I used to screenwrite too, and kind of mess around with film. And I've always wanted to branch out into it more. I just figured, you know what? I just moved to New Mexico. Oh, I was born in Chicago, by the way. So I'm also from the Midwest. Moving here to New Mexico, I was just so interested in all the different demographics that are starkly different than Chicago. So interesting. As an outsider, I think it just made me even more interested in taking pictures of the people here. They're just so interesting. And that's part of the reason too. I think I get more into like visual anthropology, documentary photography, street photography, which all kind of bleed kind of together into one category, I think. So just interesting humans. That's it's great. So
how long have you been in New Mexico now?
About 10 years. I moved here in 2010 when I was 22.
So now that you're done with school, what type of profession are you pursuing?
Right. I wish I can have something really solid to say about that, but I'm still sticking with my freelance project. So I'm really just trying to get more into my independent work. I have a lot of, I'd say about several projects right now that I'm trying to chip away at. But as me and you both know, just trying to stay afloat with whatever small employment that doesn't take me too much away from my photography. Also paying the bills, trying to submit for grants, artist in residency. So I have some of those submissions should be coming up soon to see whether I got it or not. But just the grant life. As you know, like in still photography, the grants are what kind of makes you or breaks you to kind of see if you can keep going. So
it looks like you have a good foundation to build from, though.
Thank you.
So let's talk about, well, the project we know you for.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's on my website, which is frankblasquez.com. And it's my primary and sole project, and I'm about 80% done with it, 60 to 80% done. It's called New Mexicans Told in Pictures. I mean, it's pretty simple. As the title suggests, it's basically what I tell people, it's my own private New Mexico, what I see, the things I see around my neighborhood. It's a really heavily concentrated Latino population here in this part of Albuquerque. It's called the metro area, but the more interesting subject matter is within the war zone, as they call it, in the war zone of Albuquerque. That's a little bit more of the dangerous side of town. There's a lot of police activity over there. That's where I find my most compelling images and subjects, just stuff that's just so cool that I just always have my camera with me whenever I'm in that area. But yeah, back to the project. It's about New Mexicans. It's about the people that have lived here. They have cool stuff. They have cool tattoos, stuff that you really don't see in different parts of the country as far as having statehood pride, being proud of being New Mexican. I see a lot of that. And I just want to capture those images and show what authentic New Mexican life is like.
I remember when you first sent the photos to us.
Yes.
And that was months ago. And you had there's a line in your email that said, "I was almost killed."
Right. Oh, yeah.
I can see why. I mean, some of these guys look pretty scary. I mean, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So back in October, I was finishing up an assignment at night and I was coming back home. And luckily, I didn't have my equipment on me, but I did have all of my school material. And I was coming back home from a freelance assignment. And I live in the area of where I take these pictures, so I don't kind of live far away and go back and forth. This is all of the pictures and the environments that I capture that's where I lay my head to sleep each night.
So, do you live in what's technically part of the war zone then?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. So, and so does my family too. My parents live here as well. So they live in the war zone too. But yeah, so I was coming back home that night. And as soon as I got out of my car, I was flanked by three men. They ordered me on the ground. They took off all my clothes. I wasn't sure if it was one of the subjects that I dealt with earlier that day, if they followed me, or if it was from the days before. Albuquerque is a really small town, so if you see someone once, you're probably going to see them again. I'm not sure if it was one of the subjects that I've been dealing with, but they all had masks on and they robbed me. I thought it was the end because they had all their guns up to my head, and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is what happens, I guess, when I put myself into this kind of situation. Luckily, I followed their orders. One tip, if you're ever going to be a victim of armed robbery, it always just follow their orders. It won't. You have a better chance of survival if you don't put up a fight. So I came out luckily unscathed from that. But that actually kind of pushed me to keep doing this, because I was just like, you know what, I could just stop right now, or I could really try to find out more of a deeper sense of reasoning about why stuff like this happens. So, I mean, I just want to present like the visual primary documents of the people that live in my area.
Your goal, like of the projects you do, to kind of help people in general find out why these situations are present?
Exactly. It's that. It's also, I also want to produce like a counter story as well, something that's different than what I see every day as far as still imagery is concerned. I just want to bring something fresh too. It's also that. Also, you know, that did happen to me, but most of the time, these subjects, they're really nice people for the most part. As you can see, I have portraits where about 90%, if not more, of my subjects are looking into the lens. I get their permission. I ask them if I could maybe talk to them for a few minutes to get their story. And it's all the same thing. You know, they're trying to get their life back on track. They're former gang members, former drug addicts. They might have just got off of probation, but they're really all trying to do better and trying to get their life back on track. I've rarely met someone that says that they're up to no good, or they're trying to not do something with their life. Everyone's trying to do something with their life out here. It's just that New Mexico's it's a very low income state. We have a big disparity between or a big wage gap between high wages and very low wages too. So I guess I'm capturing more of the former. So
yeah. So you're not actually working with gang members then, huh?
I mean, if you want to,
or knowingly anyway.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes I do put out ads. I put out local ads to get those kind of subjects that maybe are former gang members. I have one gentleman on my Instagram. He has a tattoo on his chest with a Pomona on it. He's from California. We spent about a couple hours talking about his days back in prison and how he's changed as a family man. And he had some very, very interesting stories. But yeah, I mean, I've done some work with gang members here. There's one gang out here. It's from California. It's called Westside 18th Street. It's a California gang that has made its way here to New Mexico, and that's one of the bigger gangs out here. It's nothing like you see like on TV, like Breaking Bad or something like that. They all kind of have their own distinct kind of group, if you will.
Yeah, speaking of Breaking Bad.
Right, yeah.
I was a big fan of the show.
Yeah, it's a great show. I
loved
it. I mean, it was very disturbing.
Yeah,
of course you knew it was going to come up. Yeah, we might even talk about The Wire while we're
right.
at it. But
that's a good one too. That's a good one.
Yeah,
Breaking Bad comes up when we're not talking to people who are near Albuquerque.
I tell you what, I mean, I've been all over this country. New Mexico is one of the states I've never visited. So the only thing I really knew about Albuquerque was that show. Well, of course, Better Call Saul as well.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I mean, both very well done, and very Breaking Bad certainly disturbing. And I mean, is that what it's like there?
No,
I mean,
no.
Is that a realistic depiction of the area?
I guess that's part of what I try to tackle as well as what are the common stereotypes about New Mexico. Like I said, there certainly is gang activity out here, but it's shows like Breaking Bad. They tend to twist it in a way that they're almost like Mexican cartel gangs. I think because we're so close to the border that people really think that, but no, the gangs are very similar to what you would see maybe like in California, in Denver, Phoenix, in Texas. They're very distinct American type of gangs. So that's one thing that Breaking Bad did get wrong is they try to make the local gangs here seem like they're like cartel, but there is certainly cartel activity here. But what you see on the surface If you're just driving through, or that if you're like me, if you're like a photographer that's just going around the neighborhood looking for people that are like really interesting, that's what you're going to see is a type of gangs that you see in California. There's a pipeline too between California and New Mexico. There's a lot of people that travel between both states. I'm still trying to figure out why that is. I've taken some history classes too on the state of New Mexico, but I'm still trying to figure out that pipeline. There's a lot of people that have family in California and New Mexico. So there's a lot of influence from California, but New Mexico also has its very distinct symbols too. So we don't have a sports team or anything major like that to kind of claim more of like branding, kind of like identity. But there certainly is a lot of history here. As you can see, I tried to show that in the tattoo work that I show. It's more on my Instagram than on my website, but the tattoo work, a lot of those are, those pieces were done in New Mexico state prisons. And those are strictly New Mexican prison gangs for some of the symbols that are there. They have certain numbers that are on them, like 1706. That's the year that New Mexico became a state. There's a lot of statehood pride within the prison tattoos. Luckily, I was fortunate enough that some of these young men said okay for me to take these pictures and gave me permission to show them, because I just think they're so cool. I mean, it's really cool. The way that they have a sense of pride in their family and their roots here.
I think from what you've been telling us so far, I feel like you've done such a good job with your portraits, because I feel like the backgrounds you choose kind of represent modern day urban life in your area. And you've captured these people in such a dignified way too. I feel like a lot of your portraits are about survival, resilience, and often in the face of some serious unresolved issues. And maybe add to that public apathy. Do you think like that your images could eventually have an impact in a positive way on the community?
Yeah, I think just the fact that this project aims on just presenting those images is strong enough. One of the greatest things that I like to do is when I have one of my subjects that I see like in the war zone, or just one of my typical subjects, and they just have a Facebook and they're taking selfies and things like that. And I just go up to them and I'm like, hey, you know what? Do you want me to take like a professional photo of you? I can get really nice of you. And they're so into it. And I'm glad that I could give them something that's a little bit better than like cell phone quality, maybe something that takes a little bit more time to capture who they are. But yes, I think just putting the images out there to show the counter story of people that you usually don't see all the time in this type of framing, at least.
So do you approach these people cold on the street, or do you get to know them first just by being in the community and then approach them later?
Right. At first, when I first started doing this about a year and a half ago, I felt, in my opinion, that the best way to start out and to kind of earn your badges in street photography or visual documentary is just go out there cold. I read that something that also Mary Ellen Mark did too. I mean, she had her days where she just went out cold on the streets, and that's just, that's the funnest part. That's so fun, just going up and just meeting people. I usually keep my my camera in my backpack, so I don't come off as a photographer right away. Plus, I have a really big Nikon too. It's kind of fat, so I don't want that to be visible. But yeah, I'll take the bus. I'll walk around these areas. I go up to people and I just say, hey, you know what? I'm a student photographer. I really like your look. Just wondering if maybe I could capture a few of your pictures. I could get you something for Facebook that you can have for yourself that you could show to your family, which is cool too. Because with all my subjects, I give them the option. If they want those pictures, they're theirs. So I'm going to give it to them. Even some of the B-roll that you don't see too. So I give them like a lot to choose from, just because I just want to give back to them. Sometimes if, you know, I, I don't have too much money, but if they ever need a couple bucks or sometimes too, I'll help them out a little bit as well. Most of the time, people do say no, though. I say about 60% of the time, they say no. Nice. They don't really get too bothered. Either they're just really busy. You know, some of these people they're out there working. They don't have time to sit around. They have two or three jobs and trying to pay rent and trying to feed their families and stuff like that. So I understand. But all the pictures that I do have that you see in my portraits, those are on the 30 to 40% that do say yes, that it's okay. Just recently, I started doing Craigslist ads to kind of narrow down on my subjects and trying to get more into the home. I like getting it. Recently, I kind of want to switch up my project and kind of finish it out with more interior shots of the living space, because that's when you really get to know someone. I think with still imagery is seeing where they eat, seeing where they go to sleep, seeing the house that they've lived in for years, seeing the house where their whole family has been forever. This where fights happen, where love happens, where friendship happens. I think that's really important, and that's how I want to finish out the project is with that, with some of the home images too. So.
Yeah, environmental portraits really tell you a lot about the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a question. A lot of people argue against, posed portraits with people in street photography at least, because they say, well, you're not capturing the person as they really are. But your portraits seem so genuine and sincere. I really feel like you're able to capture that person for who they are. How do you do that if you have, you just met them? And now they're posing. So how do you get such a genuine portrait of someone?
Yeah, as you can see, actually, someone actually pointed this out. I submitted for a grant, and someone that looked at some of my photos said, you know what, I could tell that once you get your subject in line, that's probably right when you first meet them. That's probably within the first minute of meeting them. And my answer is yes, that's correct. I feel when they do post for the portrait, that's only about a couple minutes after I get their approval. I feel like you can tell when the subject has known the photographer, if they already know their name, if they're already starting to build like a rapport. So I still want to keep that that mystery between the photographer and subject. So I try to get the picture of them right away after I first meet them. I don't tell them to pose in a certain way. I don't tell them to smile. I don't tell them to lean. I just tell them just to look in the lens. Usually teenagers and adults are already aware of what a camera does, especially in the age of social media. So they already have their certain postures or poses that they already have anyway. So I'm not going to try to coach that. So I just tell them just to look in the lens, and if I can just have their portrait, and that's what I get. I usually capture maybe around like a dozen to two dozen images per subject. That's a lot of B-roll to have, and I know some people like to say, well, try to nail it within like a couple captures, but you know what, I just love to have so much B-roll for me just to kind of spend like a few hours of like whittling down to of the exact image that I want, and that's the fun part too, is when you have five captures that are within like hairs up of a second of each other, but each one kind of has its own style to it. So that's part of it too.
Yeah, and sometimes when you're ready to stop, that's when you take one or two more.
Yeah, exactly.
It's also a very interesting observation that they made, that they could tell that you took the shots right after you met them.
Yeah. Yeah. She was from the, I think her name's Lynn. She emailed me, from the documentary film group from that grant. And she told me, she's like, Frank, you know what? I can tell that you get their approval right away. And I'm like, wow, she must be doing this for a while if she knows it. Cause I was like, wow, that's exactly what happens. I have those captures as most of my subject matter. So hopefully towards the end of this project, I can really get into the home and start building a little bit more of a connection with my subject to get more of those intimate subject matter.
I'd like to ask you more about the Craigslist ad.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. What kind of responses do you get?
Oh, yeah. I try to keep the ad pretty general. I don't limit it down into saying that I'm looking for just men or women. Since I know the demographic here leans towards a certain theme and look, I know I'm going to get what I want just after they send me their headshots or just send me their selfie about who they are. If they have a really cool story too, you know, I don't discriminate if it's someone that's older or younger. So just, you know, I put on the ad if I can just have some of their time. I'm a photographer, helping out a student photographer, a starving artist that doesn't have too much money, but can at least give you some photos and photos in exchange too. And people like getting photos in exchange too. So that's nice to do.
Do you get a lot of responses?
Yeah. It's Albuquerque. It's still a pretty small city. It's not one of the smallest cities. There's about a million people here in the metro proper area. So when I put out a Craigslist ad, the people that respond to it, I might get about a dozen or two dozen responses. And out of that, maybe about three or four of people that actually meet up. Because, you know, Craigslist, sometimes people drop out. And that's okay, too, because, you know, it is Craigslist. So, but
can't beat the price.
Exactly. But, yeah, they're still cool. You know, there's really interesting people, whether it's Craigslist or social media. I used to work on finding subjects through Facebook before my photos got banned from there. So now it's just Instagram is my main social media platform.
Yeah, tell us about the banning from Facebook. I find that very interesting. Yeah. It's not like you're making some crackpot political statement.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not showing anything vulgar. I never show anything, you know, too crazy like that. I don't like any nude photography or anything like that. I really love costumes and what people choose to wear. I'm actually really fascinated by that more. But so some of my photos, especially my photos of subjects that were former gang members, sometimes I do ask them to show me what their signs are, because that's their identity. That's their family. That's what they consider a family, their mother and father, because some of my subjects don't have a traditional family. So their gangs are their family. Those are the people that have helped raise them and feed them and clothe them. So when you see gang signs like that, that represents their family. And I guess when I put that on Facebook, I think maybe the local community might even know some of the subjects. So they reported most of my gang stuff pretty heavily, so that got me a temporary ban. And then I went back on and got banned again. And I think I'm off of my ban right now, but I'm not going to go on Facebook just to have my stuff censored and just cherry pick the stuff that I think people would find like pleasant or things like that. So hopefully I could stay on Instagram for a while. They're pretty cool. So.
Well, speaking of Facebook, and you're talking about the gang signs or gang signals, is that the hand signals I see some people making? For example, on your website, there's a guy with his back turned, and he's making a C with one hand, and his
with the left hand. That's 18 for 18th Street. It's a one, and then he kind of made his fingers into an eight. And then the other hand is signaling an E. It's a backwards E, but that's the E for 18. Once again, that's a major California gang that transported and made its own Albuquerque faction. So that gentleman was part of that gang there. He was a former gang member. He's a really nice person, by the way. His name is Antonio. He's a really hard worker. He's a truck driver. He lives with his 12-year-old son, and actually they're doing really well. I think he said he was starting school sometime soon too, like at the local college here. So he had a really interesting story. But yeah, those are the gang signs. Just like any other gang, whether it's Chicago or or Cleveland, Los Angeles, New York, you have your signs that you throw up that represent what location you're from, what gang that you represent. So that's one of the major ones here. If it's not signs, it's also in the tattoo work too. Those tattoos are from, or sometimes they represent friends that have died, family members that have died in the streets. So most of them are memorial tattoos as well. I'm trying to add to my section on my website, which is called Eulogies, and that's trying to kind of like highlight some of those pieces as well.
Yeah, it never ceases to amaze me. We all live in the same country, but then there's these pieces of it that are just so different that most of us don't understand, and that's something you're bringing to the rest of us.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm trying to do that. I'm really influenced heavily by Joseph Rodriguez and Robert Yeager and what they've done with gangs back in like the late 80s and the early 90s with their black and white photography. So their influence is really heavy on me. I remember just going through their books for hours at my local library, and I felt like if I could even just be 5% of what they are in terms of what they're showing, like for gang culture and showing the counter narrative of what you don't see too much. And, then I'd be satisfied. So,
yeah, I mean, you take the tattoos away you know, the scary clothes and that, I mean, people are people.
Yeah.
And they basically, we all want the same thing.
Exactly.
That's true. Could you tell us a little more about some of your filmmaking projects? For example, I know you have like a trailer on your website about Duke City Diaries.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I've recently started getting into the movement image. I think that's kind of what some photographers do, right? They start moving up to doing movies, right? Because that's where all the money's at, right? No. right. But, so I'm starting to work more with the movement image. We had one subject, his name's Deco. He's also on my Instagram. I have like a 3-pack of him in the middle of my page. He has the really cool, head tattoos that have like the state symbol on them and things like that. And one of my friends, his name's John Acosta. He's a local filmmaker here. We both found Deco very interesting. He had a really nice story. He was really easy to work with. And we're like, hey, you know what? Let's start working a little bit more in mediating your story to a wider audience. John shot most of it. He's a director of photography, and he cut it and everything too. So that's our sizzler kind of trailer that we've been sending out to try to get more funding, because as you already know, to make a full length feature or something close to it is nothing. It's not a small feat. So you're going to need like $50,000, $60,000 plus to even start thinking about what you're going to do to make a nice full feature. So we're
do you
still
think that would make a bigger impact than just your still photography?
Yes and no. I mean, still photography, even though we're both capturing light, still photography has its purpose because it really freezes a space and time. It's almost kind of like music to me sometimes, is when you haven't seen like a still photo in a long time, whether it's a family member that has passed away or just strong imagery that hits you hard. That's something that I don't think film can really do entirely. I think film does it in its own way because it can add sounds. You can actually hear the subject speak. You can see them move. I'm trying to find like a middle ground between the two, but I know they're just so closely related. I know there's a lot of theory that says that still photography is still completely different than film, but they're still so closely related to me that I think just working with both fields is still trying to reach my goal of just showing people that haven't been seen. So.
Well, that's exciting. It sounds like there's a lot of room for new, different creative endeavors there.
Thank you. Thank you. And if you get whoever's listening out there, if you feel compelled, I have a campaign going out on Indiegogo under Duke City Diaries. We have some cool swag too that we give out for certain donations too. So if you guys want to check that out, it's on YouTube as well. Duke City is the nickname for Albuquerque, so that's why it's called Duke City Diaries. So.
Ah. Well, we'll definitely put a link to your Indiegogo in the article.
Thank you.
Yeah, I also noticed that you have a couple projects that are collaborations besides your Duke City Diaries. What do you think are the benefits of working on projects as a collaboration?
Oh, it's so fun to do because you get someone else's perspective and you really gain their assistance and seeing things that aren't really there. My friend John, he's the one that that shot Duke City Diaries for that trailer. He's a native New Mexican. I am not. So certain symbols or things that maybe I look over that he would tell me, you know, hey, this is really important that we capture. That's why it's great having John on there too. So John's also he's also a graduate of the University of New Mexico. So we both have. We both have that background too of just working with the same kind of subject matter in our school. So.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if you could tell us what's the least understood thing about you?
Maybe my work ethic. Sometimes I can be a quiet person. I'm really observant, and I think that's why I kind of gravitated towards photography and kind of like this voyeuristic kind of path of kind of like presenting subject matter like this. But yeah, I would say that is my work ethic. I try not to stay idle too much. I'm always moving around. I'm really antsy. I think I have ADD or something like that. I just always have to be doing something. So just trying to reach my goals on a daily basis is kind of my goal there. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, what have you changed your mind about lately?
I just graduated back in May, and the past 4 years of my life have just been just school and work and also doing my freelance stuff too for my photography. And I'd say the thing that changed most about me is now I kind of have a little bit more room to breathe. I'm not used to that. I find that I'm more active and productive when I have a really packed schedule and I'm really busy. So I think I need to just start getting back into the swing of things with just trying to make my plate a little bit more fuller just so I could kind of work on everything. So yeah, so I guess just trying to get acclimated to all this time that I have on my hands and trying to just stay afloat with grants and calls for entries, trying to submit for different galleries and artists and residencies. Those things take time. So hopefully one of those works out for me.
What kind of new projects do you have on the horizon?
You know what? There's a really cool scene out here in Albuquerque for karaoke. it's a really interesting crowd. I'm going to be putting that. I might actually do a separate website for different subject matter, I think, too. So I might be doing that within the next several months, and this project might be on there. I'm going to call it New Mexico Karaoke All-Stars. it's a really cool crowd. There's cool little bars out here. They're not too packed. They're tucked away here in the foothills of the mountains. And it's a really cool crowd that goes out there. So yeah, stay tuned for that. It's really interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I also wanted to do, one project, also highlighting the fast food and retail industry out here of the workers. So whether it's like McDonald's, Burger King, Walmart, kind of like the big, big box, big chain stores. I just want to get simple portraits of people in their work uniforms. So I'm also working on that as well too. So,
Well, I hope you get some shots at, what's the store, Los Pollos Hermanos?
Oh, yeah.
Did I say that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's called Twisters. That's the real name of it, but then they change it.
No, I want Frick's one or Fring, right?
Right, yeah. Sorry to burst your bubble. Sorry to take away.
Yeah, I want to see the real thing. Yeah. So that's where they shot them, huh? Yeah. They shot them in a real chicken place?
Yeah, it is. It is. Yep.
I'm sorry. I'm getting you off track.
No, it's okay. Don't worry.
Yeah, for those who don't know Breaking Bad, that's a fast food place in the show.
Right.
All right. Well, Frank, anything else to share with us before we go?
I think we basically hit on everything. I'm just trying my best here to show the wonderful state of New Mexico. To people that haven't been out here yet or haven't visited, please come out and check it out. It's one of the most beautiful places on earth. So when I think of paradise and stuff on earth that's close to it, I think the scenery of New Mexico gets pretty close to it. So please come visit New Mexico if you have a chance. It's really cheap here too, so it's not expensive to have a vacation here. So come out and check us out. And that's about it. Thank you so much for having me.